This is the Courier Talking Football. I'm Sean Hamilton, and joining me today to talk about an exciting weekend of football in Tayside is Jim Spence, as usual.
Sean.
And we're also joined by a special guest today, Dundee United legend, Dundee player, former Raith Rovers as well. So he's
just
ticking.
Just an all-in legend.
He's ticking a few boxes for us this morning. It's Jim McInally. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm good, thanks.
Excellent.
Pleased to be here.
Nice. Well, I think we kicked off last week with Dundee United, and I think we'll do the same thing this week. I mean, that was a win they desperately needed. And really, I think they I was going to say they did so with some style, perhaps not like ridiculously so, but 2-0 against your nearest rivals in the situation that they're in. I mean, they've kind of taken the impetus out of Raith Rovers' hands at this point, which is the most important thing. I mean, we'll start with you, Jim. I mean, you were at the game. What did you make of United at the weekend?
I felt as though they started the game with a game plan that they knew exactly what they were wanting out of the game, which was to win, and no particularly in any great style.
Mm-hmm.
I felt after 10 minutes, Raith Rovers really started the game really well, mm-hmm. and there was a couple of instances where United get really lucky, and I actually said to whoever was sitting beside me, I think it was Mark Fotheringham at the time, this could be United's day, mm-hmm. because there was one... In particular, there was one kind of as Arthur Montford would say, a stramash where they carried a lot of luck, and I just felt as though it could be their day. And, they eventually played their way into the game, mm-hmm. and then they got their goal for a free kick, which, again, was, I think, all part of the game plan for Jim, was to get the ball into the box and get mm-hmm. it up to Moulton Watt.
Yeah.
And, you know, the centre-half for Raith Rovers, had 5 years with him at Peterhead, mm-hmm. great boy, but never been a centre-half in his life. I used to call him Turtleneck because as soon as the ball came near his head, he lost the first header.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Watt had a fantastic finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt for then on in, United were pretty safe. I mean, no safe, but the penalty kick was ridiculous. I mean, I don't know if it's been seen to be ridiculous. I've only seen it once, and it made a comfortable last 15 minutes for United.
Aye.
It looked a shocking decision, but Raith Rovers were still struggling to get in the game, I felt, at that time.
Mm-hmm. Jim, were you there as well?
Yeah, I was having a chat with you, Jimmy, and that beforehand. I mean, I was just thinking, I mean, I'll see Jimmy's Arthur Montford and raise him an Archie McPherson because there were a couple of oofs in the first 5 minutes. Ruth,
yeah.
What do you call him? There was a bar strike, wasn't there? Rodden hit the bar at one stage, but
mm-hmm.
Jim's right. I mean, early on, Raith actually came out of traps for about the first 5 or 6 minutes quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I mean, United simply dominated them. I mean, I was looking at Alan Temple's piece in the Courier Report, and Temp said the best performance of the season of United so far. And
I think he said the best performance of 2024.
And it was. There was nothing to fault. I mean, mm-hmm. defensively, they were sound. I mean, no doubt we'll be talking about
the defence, come on to that.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, that was intriguing. But I mean, all round, really, really good performance. And I mean, about Jimmy's expertise on this, but I think as you come down the leagues in Scottish football, I think it's less about, I'm not saying tactics are not important, not for a minute or setups, but I think when you get to this stage, you're talking about the right attitude, the right controlled aggression, determination, all the things that mark out, you know, the guys that make it in the game from the wannabes, you know, the, mm-hmm. the boys that thought they could have made it, you know, the things that you come out to be a professional footballer, I thought you're not sure all of those
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. And Raith just couldn't fight their way into the game.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things that probably maybe Ian Murray might think he could have done differently, you know. For mm-hmm. instance, Byrne, I think, might have been on earlier, you know, for that kind of combative midfield mm-hmm. approach. But it was an all-round terrific performance, superb at the back, untroubled at the back, to be honest, other than that early, you know, that kind of early couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Really good midfield performance, and, you know, who sometimes, you know, Tony's got all the ability in the world, but
yeah.
he kind of sometimes flatters to deceive. Tremendous performance from him. You know, and he didn't lead the line as such, but kind of up there, kind of supplying Milton, playing off Milton, Fotheringham and Middleton in the wide. I thought it was an all-round terrific performance.
Right.
Referee almost spoiled the number of bookings. I kind of lost count. It was just a nightmare. But football-wise, if you're a United fan in that 10,300,
yeah,
great backing, you could not complain about anything.
Yeah.
Great performance.
I think one of the other things that we have talked about in recent weeks, Jim Mack, is mentality as well. I mean, Jim's touched on aggression and what have you there. I think there probably were questions about United's mentality in pressure situations this season because they've lost big games against Wraith, actually, previously. They missed a few opportunities to kind of stretch away. So there were questions asked about the mentality. Did they answer those for you on Saturday?
I think ultimately, I mean, I've been to a few United games recently. The crowd were the biggest aspect of the game, I think,
right,
where I think for the first time probably in a few weeks in a few home games, there was no negativity.
Right.
And I felt as though they needed the backing of the crowd. Mm-hmm. They got the backing of the crowd. Don't get me wrong, I'm not criticising the crowd for the way they've been, because at the end of the day, whatever football team you play for, you need to handle, mm-hmm, or the players, mm-hmm, need to handle expectations. They haven't been handling expectations, especially at Tannadice, because their record's pretty grim.
Yeah.
But on Saturday, the feel-good factor was there for the start. The crowd were behind them. They had a game plan that they weren't going to take any chances. I would like to have seen them try to... I'm not an advocate of just playing out for the sake of it, but uh-huh, even at times when they get a free kick, maybe 20 yards out their box or whatever, the goalkeeper was just playing it long and uh-huh, up to the two front guys, uh-huh, rather than try to get the full-backs on the ball. And but that's just you know, me nitpicking a wee uh-huh bit. But in general terms, I thought the front two were the difference between the teams.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the front two showed what they're all about, the good experienced players, mm-hmm, and they linked the game up really well, mm-hmm, and they were just a handful for the whole 90 minutes.
I mean, we spoke to, Lee Wilkie was on the show last week, and we spoke to him about the difference that a crowd can make to a game. And quite clearly they did. I mean, a great crowd. I mean, they've been backed well all season, to be fair. Usually around 7,000, 8,000, mm-hmm, what have you. They were over 10,000 at the weekend there. But as you mentioned, Alan, mm-hmm, Temple earlier, Jim, that was the first game, 10,000 plus crowd, yeah, in seven that they've won. They've lost the last seven with 10,000 plus in there. So fair play to the crowd then.
Well, I mean, United had over, I think Wraith had 1,333.
Yeah.
It was a strange figure. So they're basically 9,000 turned out.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, yeah, and it's easy to kind of, I mean, even in the glory years, Jim, I mean, United often, you know, regularly didn't get 9,000 kind of, no, of a home course support, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the best ever average attendance was 11,000 one season. That's in a league where, you know, you'd Celtic and Rangers and Hibs and Hearts bringing bigs and Dundee and all the rest of it, you know. So, I mean, that was a terrific crowd. And, I mean, you know, we sat here last week, we talked about this big streak. In fact, I touched on it at the column on Saturday. I mean, I think a crowd can make a heck of a difference if they stick with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, you know, that's not the same. I'm not going to sit here as a journalist who can walk in with a press card and, yep, tell boys that pay their 24 or 27 quid or 400 quid for their season books.
Just stop complaining.
You know. But I think there comes a time, I think I said in the column, it was a day to cheer, not a jeer.
Yeah.
You know, you can't imagine any other occupation. If a plumber walks into your house or a, you know, a roofer's doing a bit of work on your roof, you're going to be shouting and bawling at the boy while he's working away, you know, and yet you feel free to do that with football players.
I do that all the time.
We do it, and I've done it, you know, I've done it myself, but long before I was involved in journalism as a, you know, as a laddie, because you're daft, you didn't think about things. But I mean, you want to encourage people.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a negativity, I think, sometimes about us, mm-hmm, as Scots. And I think the two Dundee crowds can be quite hard to play to. And it's much easier if guys feel they're getting the back in and people are knowing their back if they misplace a pass or they miss time a tackle.
Yeah.
And they're getting away with it and the crowds know their back. You know, I think your confidence grows. But and every player's different. I mean, Jimmy will have played with boys that have got really, really strong mentalities. There's some guys that kind of, like any other workplace, they slink into their shell, mm-hmm, a wee bit. And I think the crowd were terrific on Saturday. They stuck with them all the way. But it was a two-way street, because you know, the United boys gave them something to kind of,
yes,
to cheer about and be happy about. So it was a two-way street. I thought it was a, mm-hmm, all round, it was a really, it was one of these kind of special days you get. You don't always, aye, don't getting that off in a football, but you know, everything about the thing, the day was very positive.
A bit of a statement, wasn't it? We asked Lee Wilkie this last week, Jim, but you've played in front of both sets of supporters in this city. Are they similar sorts of groups to play in front of? Is one of them better than the other to play in front of? One of them more difficult?
I felt when I went to Dundee the second time after leaving United, I was always one of these guys since I came to Dundee and I stayed in the city. I always went to home games. Mm-hmm. If it was a midweek game, I was at Dens,
right,
or whatever. And I always felt that the Dundee fans were often more vociferous, mm-hmm, than United, or worse at getting on the backs of their, yeah, team, because they think of United's dominance at the time, mm-hmm, and because of the success United had had early years. And I'd seen Dundee teams wilt, mm-hmm, over the years because of that. And when I went back the second time as a Championship team, I seen it for myself, mm-hmm, when I started playing in it. And I seen players hiding to a certain extent, mm-hmm, because, you know, they maybe couldn't cope. And we actually won the league, mm-hmm, reasonably comfortably that season.
Yep.
But there is an expectation, and obviously just because United's success, I'm sure that they didn't have the same patience as United fans did at the time.
Yep.
But I think you could maybe flip that a wee bit over the last 20 years, mm-hmm, to United fans, you know, no being jealous of Dundee or whatever, but just being, you know, desperate to have a bit of solidity about the club, or you know, but I mean, that's still lacking. That, mm, they need, I think they need ownership that's going to be there for them, that's, mm-hmm, that the fans can relate to something positive happening in the pitch. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, United have just had the most loyal support,
yeah,
the last 20, 25 years, that I think any club.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's remarkable when you think about how the crowds have, I mean, they've not even held up. And it feels like they've gone up since they've gone down, the crowds, you know, mm-hmm, because you get far fewer away, mm-hmm, supporters at games, but you're still seeing 7,000, 8,000. I mean, that's a remarkable display of loyalty.
Well, I mean, that crowd on Saturday was as big, I think, as you know, Temps was talking about the Hearts game. Mm-hmm. It was just over 10,000 at the Hearts game. Mm-hmm. So it's 10-3 against it. You know, there's a combination of things for me, actually. You know, I'm a fan of a bigger league. It proves that clubs like Rafer or Dunfermline or Falkirk if the occasion is right, can also attract big, big crowds, you know. Mm-hmm. But the support's been tremendous this season. Over 7,000 at home course support, I think, every game. Mm-hmm. And on the road, I mean, the crowds on the road have been tremendous, yeah, as well. They've taken huge crowds on the road as well. So there's a kind of, I agree with Jimmy. I think that, you know, there is, I'd like to see a much more local feel about the club. No knocking Mark Ogren. He's been, I think, a decent owner. He's got kind of, I think, slightly kind of carried away with things, maybe sometimes badly advised at some stages and all the rest. But I would like to see a bit more kind of local kind, mm-hmm, of ownership of the club, if you want, you know, because everything
he's
else...
He's put a hell of a lot of money in.
He's put a lot of money in, that's right, but everything else is going, you know, is going well. There's a kind of, there's a real tribal loyalty about, mm-hmm, United. You get that every football club, but there's, mm-hmm, a real kind of tribal loyalty,
yeah,
about them this season. And there is now, I mean, you know, you could argue at one stage, maybe until about 10 years ago, that if you took the two kind of home core supports, there might not have been that much in it if you know, we're both going well. But United are undoubtedly better supported now by a, yeah, good couple of thousand, maybe more, you know. So, mm-hmm, they've got, I mean, different from when I was a boy in a town, Dundee, where, you know, as I was a laddie growing up, Dundee, mm-hmm, were still by far the bigger of the two clubs. That United have closed that gap and then they've gone in front of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to on the pitch. If you like, there was a wee bit of a surprise in the defence. We obviously knew that Kevin Holt was injured, wasn't going to make it. Declan Gallagher not being there was a shock. So in come Sam McClelland, who's obviously on loan from St Johnstone, but haven't seen him yet. And Ross Graham. And by all accounts, both of them were excellent.
I thought the two of them, they weren't exposed. Again, mm-hmm, I think that is credit to Jim Goodwin for the way that he set them up to play. He never exposed them to you know, to try and get in the ball, or you know, can you play out for the back? Because a lot of time now with central defenders especially, they're judged on how they pass the ball and know how they defend. So I think the way Jim kept, he simplified the game, that, you know, there's your job. You've got to play against, you know, one striker will play up, one striker will play off, and they had a wee bit of protection for Docherty in the middle.
And how high did they set up the pitch generally? Were they?
Nah, they were high enough. They pushed up enough. I think they decent pace about the two of them. I just felt as though they were solid, and they'd done their job. And even when the opposition box, they were a handful,
a threat,
in there. I mean, Ross Graham has played quite a lot, and he's had a wee bit of a raw deal. I think at times he played in a three more than a back four, and when he's come into the back four, he's maybe not been just as ready to be exposed as you can be in a back four, but. He certainly, and I thought on Saturday, the two of them were excellent. First time I'd ever seen the boy for St Johnstone.
Yes.
And I thought he handled himself really well. Again, they were never exposed to try to play the game or try to play out for the back. Or, so therefore, their confidence was always pretty strong. And I think we need to give a wee mention to the right back, who I didn't realise was the striker I'd been watching last season.
Thompson.
So when somebody told me at the game, I mean, I watched him, was it Montrose I watched him play for? And then I watched him, I'm sure he came on as a striker for United last season. And to realise it was the same boy is a pretty remarkable transformation, because again, in the game, he was solid, he gets forward well. He's not the strongest boy in the world, but he's still hard to get past because he's quick. And I mean, it's some turnaround to be going to a striker to a right back, and I think we need to give that boy some credit.
Does Jim Goodwin deserve some credit for that as well? Because I mean, when you think of Jim Goodwin as a manager and what his teams tend to be, and even just specifically United this season, how they've tended to play, taking risks isn't his natural sort of state, it would seem, but getting a player like Miller Thompson and converting him to a right back midway through a season when you're trying to go for promotion, that's bold.
It was bold, especially when he had a senior player like Liam Grimshaw there, who you know, he's played at this level for quite a long time. So it was bold from him, but you know, whoever discovered or how they ended up playing him at right back, it would be interesting to know how that happened, but certainly it deserves credit for sticking him in, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think another area of the park where they were decent and, probably offered a bit of protection to Graham and McClelland is in the midfield, in the centre there. So you've got Sybald and Docherty in there again, both of whom did well.
Yeah, I mean, I like Docherty.
When they've played together, that's been good.
Yeah, they're a good duo. They're a good kind of combo. I mean, Sybil's had a great season. I mean, he's combative.
He's a grafter, isn't he?
I think Temps is talking about him snapping in. Jimmy, in some respects, he reminds me of you. Well, I think his goal scoring record's better. You know, what did you score? Once every 18 games or something. Like that.
Every time I played Aberdeen.
No, I mean, you know, Jim's the ideal boy to talk about, you know, midfield abilities. I thought the two of them were terrific, you know. Yeah. I mean, they bossed the midfield all day. Wraith, I think, will feel disappointed that they didn't put up more of a kind of show in the midfield, but it's very difficult when you're up against boys that are snapping into tackles and are passing well and, you know, reading the game and are shutting down space quickly and all the rest of it. And, I mean, the two of them are terrific. Sybald is... Sybil broke through it, wasn't it? I mean, I remember seeing him. I used to bizarrely cover a lot of games down there at New Brockwell, as I always prefer to call it. And I was always impressed with him. And he kind of, you know, he slipped his sight for a while. And then, you know, he's one of these boys you think you should have actually achieved more in the game. I mean, he's got very few weaknesses in his armour that I can see. But the two of them are terrific, you know, the two of them. And they protected that back line, didn't they? You know, they pretty much bossed the midfield, didn't a lot through. And Jim's right in terms of McClelland and Graham. Just, you know, you're not expecting a Franco Baresi in the Scottish Championship, you know, or a Van Dijk. I mean, the two of them did what they did. They defended. And they were allowed to do that. they were allowed to just defend because they weren't getting put under massive amounts of pressure because the midfield kind of closed off much of the threat to it. So a really solid performance from Sybald and Docherty. You know, just nothing to complain about. And Jim Goodwin does deserve a lot of credit because I think, you know, Jim was under massive pressure on Saturday. I mean, there were people saying before the game, I mean, if he loses this game, he'll get the sack as well. I don't think he'll get the sack, you know, before the end of the season. But to be honest with you, I think if United had lost that game and Wraith went on to win the league, whether we'd still be there next season would be a highly debatable point, you know. So there was a lot of pressure on the manager. And I think the key thing, we talked about this last week, the key thing with the manager is trying to take that pressure off the players. Because, you know, some guys have got strong mentality, some guys have got weak mentalities, and you're trying to send a team onto the park. It's not just a team, it's the whole squad. You're sending them out there with the right attitude. There's not any pressure here, boys. I believe in you, I know you can do it, you know. And you get them out the door and you go for you know. So I think Jim set the team up brilliantly and they performed absolutely to the game plan. It was a great day's work for them all.
Yeah, I mean it looks like a statement win at this point in the season against your nearest rivals and what have you. But I mean at the same time, it doesn't feel like it was a decider. There's still a wee bit to go yet. And I mean, if United can pull out a consistent run of wins, then fantastic. That will be job done for them. But they haven't really managed to do that since November, really. They've been a wee bit up and down since then. So can you see this one going to the wire still?
I think as Moray a neutral, right?
Mm-hmm.
People were saying to me it's decision day and whatever. I never felt that. I felt even if United lost on Saturday, they would still have won it. Because I don't believe, I mean, I think if you look at Wraith Rovers' record over the past 3 or 4 months, it's pretty poor. And the only thing that's kept them in touch has been United's home record.
Yeah.
Which has been really poor. So I never had any faith that, you know, Wraith Rovers' game in hand was against Airdrie. I think I've beaten them every time they've played them this year.
Yeah.
And
decent football inside.
Aye. So I still felt as though United would have had enough to get over the line. But I think we winning on Saturday, it puts massive pressure on Wraith Rovers now to beat Airdrie in that game in hand. And, you know, when you look at Wraith Rovers, they're weak enough at the back, I think. I mean, they've been unlucky. I think they took the boy for Dundee in loan. And is it Murray? Was it Murray they took for Dundee on loan?
Rudden.
No, the centre half. It was a centre half.
Well, the centre half were Murray and Brown.
Well, Murray. I think he's anyway. He came off injured early.
Right.
Keith Watson.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that struggle with injuries. And as I said before, I touched on it. Scott Brown playing at centre half. He's played there a lot this season. They've won a lot of games with him there.
Yeah.
But for me, he's a good midfield player.
Mm-hmm.
And they missed somebody like him in the middle of the park on Saturday. So I think, you know,
Stan it felt like Stanton was maybe a bit limited by where he was playing as well.
I think they needed an extra body in there on Saturday for that game. And they tried to play kind of a 4-4-1-1 type of thing with Louis Vaughan just playing off Rudden. But they came up short and I felt as though the middle of the park was where they lost it. So, getting back to the original question, I think United are in a really strong position now. And even when they play at Tannadice, I think the crowd might have learned a lesson that we need to get them over the line.
Yeah.
And the way to get them over the line is to back them and support them. And I'm pretty sure that will happen.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, I mean, you alluded to it earlier on, but whatever happens to you now in the rest of the season, if they get another penalty, they'll never get another penalty as soft. This is the one. Now, you take everything in football, but I mean, that's a soft.
Can I just touch on the referee's performance? I don't think it should go unnoticed because.
Shocker.
Before the game, I thought that they sent probably the number one referee in Scotland at the minute, Nick Walsh, to referee this game because it could be a powder big keg, deal. It's a big crowd, whatever. And for the start of the game to the end of the game, he had a shocker.
Yeah.
He had an absolute shocker. And he had one of these ones where he booked somebody, I think Louis Moult, for a high boot, which was a total accident. Yeah. And I know the boy Yang got sent off at Tynecastle for a few weeks ago, but there wasn't any lessons learned. And about 5 minutes later, a Raith Rovers player had a high boot against a United player, mm-hmm. which went unpunished.
Mm-hmm.
And then, from then on in, I felt as though the United support actually made a few decisions for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which was remarkable, because I was thinking to myself, he could actually be refereeing at Ibrox
next week. That's right, an experienced
mm-hmm. and And like a lot of these referees now, I've watched Kevin Clancy at Arbroath a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
when they're coming away for VAR,
yeah,
they seem to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And that penalty he gave on Saturday was bizarre, because it was one of the ones you probably think, well, I'll give a penalty, but oh, I've not got VAR anymore. I've not got VAR to bail me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just felt his yellow cards. There was hardly a bad tackle in the game.
Jim, it's a good point. I never even thought about that. The psychology of thinking, I've got a backup here.
Yeah.
Belt and braces. And actually, suddenly you realise I've given a decision, I've not got a backup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's too late to do anything about it then. I mean, Moult played. I'm saying Moult played for it, but I'm not even sure Moult did play for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Keith Watson was there. I never saw that. I've watched it again in the replays. The hand's never touched,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he's behind
them. There was space between them.
Space between them, and Mo goes down, and you know, it's kind of...
Aye. Now, you expect that. I mean, we'll touch on refereeing and VAR when we speak about St Johnson in a wee bit as well, because there was another incident in their game, and no, Craig Levein not happy with it. So we'll get on to that. But I mean, just finally, before we move away from United here, I mean, they're actually, as Alan Temple has said in his piece, they're only now 1 point away from Dundee's tally last season, with which they won the league. They've got quite a few games left. I mean, for all that over recent months we've kind of talked about how it's awfully close and tense and all that stuff, they could end up conceivably with a great points total here. I mean, they've only lost five games all season. So, I mean, can you see them putting a run together at this point after that? Jim, do you think?
I think it's always difficult, because, you know, you're, as a journalist or a fan, we're privileged in the respect we see a lot more of what goes on. You know, you
mm-hmm.
train, you speak to boys at training after games and all the rest. You see a lot more than the boys that are paying their money do, but you still don't know the ins and outs of the dressing room and the mentality of players and all the rest of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
so. I was going to say, I think that will have lifted their confidence. There's plenty of guys at Tannadice who were confident. And they were they on a bad run? They weren't playing as well, I think, as people would have liked them to do. And they weren't winning games as well, I think, as people would have liked them to do. But they're getting over the line. They're still top there. And, you know, football's tough at any level. It's and the Championship's particularly tough. It's a grueling league. So, you know, they're sitting there now with 4 points of difference, albeit Raith have got a game in hand. But said all along this season, they've got a better squad. And I think the thing that, irrespective of how they were set up on Saturday, the thing that struck me was Raith have beaten United twice. They've drawn once with them until Saturday. United just looked, for me, man for man and pound for pound, by far the better side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they looked more accomplished, they looked more athletic, they looked sharper, everything about them. And I was kind of tending to think, why is there such a narrow gap between these two sides? So, you know, I think they will have taken confidence, and I think the point about the crowd, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the crowd must now know this is the way to lift the boys over the line between now and end of the season. Let's kind of stay off their back when they make the odd mistake, which players will make. You know what I mean? Football's not a precise science, you know. And if you stay off people's backs and you encourage them, that lifts players. I mean, I've thought all along they would win the league. I've said that. Must have been a couple of wobbles along the way, but I think now they'll be over the line. If they can go on the run, and, you know, frankly, does the points total thing matter? For historical reasons, yes. It's all about getting over the line. It's all about getting up. There's only been one kind of thing that's been important all season for United, for a club of this size,
mm-hmm.
and that's to be back in the Premiership, because it's where they belong.
Yeah.
But you've not got a God-given right to be there, but
no.
They'll do it.
Excellent. Okie doke. Well, speaking of the Premiership, let's move on up. Dundee at St Johnstone at the weekend there. Wasn't a vintage performance from Dundee this season. I mean, we've spoken about how when they're at their best, this Dundee team can be very, very good. They weren't quite there on Saturday, but they managed to grind it out. And that's a key skill as well. And that's moved them into the top six. And they've got a game on hand on Hibs, which is against Rangers, to be fair. But it's still in their hands, isn't it? So Dundee, top six, what do you think? Have they got enough about them to get that place, Jim, do you think?
I think the league is muchness.
Yeah.
You know, between the bottom
stretch of it.
And, you know, maybe fifth or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they've still got a good chance. I mean, the thing what I've seen about Dundee, I've not seen a lot of them this season, but even when I've seen them at Celtic Park, for instance, mm-hmm. they look like one of the teams that can go and score a goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is crazy, right? They were 6-2 at half-time against Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
But could have scored 2 or 3 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Second half, you know, they draw the game 1-1 in the second half, but they could still score 2 or 3 goals.
Aye.
And that's what I see about them, that mm-hmm. they have got goals in them. They could obviously defend better. But I think when you can score goals, you've got a chance to get in there. And mm-hmm. even in Saturday, if they didn't play that well, I seen the goals last night.
Yeah.
You know, they're finding a way mm-hmm. to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something probably that could help them get in the top six.
Yes. Speaking of goals, we'll speak about it from a St Johnstone's perspective in a wee bit. But the first one for Dundee, obviously, is the product of a howler, if you want, from the goalkeeper. Rush of blood to the head, whatever you want to call it. Not entirely sure what he was doing that far out there. To be fair, he did get to the ball first, but he's succeeded only in heading it straight to Bakayoko of Dundee, and then it's broken to Cameron, and now it is an empty net, but he's a long way out. He's still got enough to do to finish that off, so he did well to do so.
Well, you've got to retain your composure. That's the first thing, I think. You know, I mean, that's the great thing about watching football from the stands. You look, you think, there's the pass, there's the shot.
Yeah.
But there's a forest of legs round about you, a forest of bodies round about you. You know, you know, young Cameron did very, very well just to kind of be composed enough to look up, take the shot. You know, nice angle. And finished it well.
Yeah.
What Mitov was doing, I have no idea.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was just a rush of blood. I mean, I wouldn't have knocked the guy too hard because he had a great season for Saints.
He's been superb.
He's been a really good keeper. He's made very, very few errors that I can see this season. And most keepers have got one or two in them in the season. That was probably his. Uh-huh. He meant well. You know, like I said, he meant well to come out and try to clear. And, you know, like I said a minute ago, it's not a precise science. You've got a fraction of a second to make these decisions. He came out and, on reflection, he made the wrong one, and Cameron exercised the option to pop it away from 45 yards. You know, from a Dundee perspective, I think it just kind of just exemplifies the work that Doc's done there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a tremendous. I mean, in fact, young Cameron was saying himself, wasn't he, in the piece with George Cran and the Courier, that mm-hmm. He was talking about the doubters. I mean, I'm not sure how many doubters there have been, but I mean, I think most of us probably thought the start of the season with a team being practically rebuilt, that would just survival would be a great thing.
Oh, aye, absolutely. Yeah.
And here they're going for top six.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is quite incredible. I mean, Cameron himself I know you said you've not seen much of Dundee this season, but Cameron is one of the standouts, I think. And it's quite a turnaround, because if you go back about a year and a half, whatever, he wasn't starting in the Championship, and now he's a fixture in that team in the Premiership under Tony Docherty, scoring loads of goals for a midfielder. He's really turning into a prospect.
Well, I had him 2 spells at Peterhead.
Well, there we go.
So first spell, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. I mean, when you're his size,
mm-hmm.
you've got to do something different in a game to get yourself in the team.
Mm-hmm.
And in his first spell at Peterhead, he was excellent, really good. I believe he was in about the first team even then.
Mm-hmm.
When he came back the second time, he had dropped off a wee bit,
mm-hmm.
and was finding it difficult to get in our team.
Right.
No, always his fault, but we're speaking to James McPake at the time. He was away for the first team. He was training away for the first team.
Right.
And I think he had lost that wee edge that,
mm-hmm.
and probably a bit of confidence. Yeah. Listen, he was a young kid.
Yeah.
But he definitely struggled in that second period. Dundee were also, at that particular time, no letting them come to training. I had three of them for Dundee at the time, and they wanted to get into training on a Thursday, which was fine, making it hard for me to play them on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Obviously, with situations that I've got to be fair to the other players in my team. So Lyle was a wee bit of a victim of politics.
Yeah.
And they ended up at the game for a wee while because John Nelms wouldn't take them back. Therefore, right. Peterhead, we actually had to keep paying his wages until such times as we got to March time.
Right.
And I took one of them back just for to keep on playing. I'd already, Josh Mulligan, they took back because he was getting into the first team anyway.
Right.
So Lyle was believe it or not, he went to Montrose and we were paying his wages for him to play for Montrose to keep on playing football.
Crikey.
So he went there and had a good spell and then I think when Gary Boyer came, Gary Boyer took a real interest in him, got him back in about it again, and then he really picked up with Gary and this season he's kicked on, and even seeing him scoring for Scotland.
Yes, absolutely.
Last week I was so chuffed for him because he went through that wee bit of time that young players go through. And
it could go either way.
Aye, he's come through it and I was so chuffed for him.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, Dundee, beyond Cameron, I think, actually midfield again, Mo Silla, he was absolutely terrific, I thought, at the game. He's really becoming an important part of that team. I think he's one of these one of these midfielders that's ever so valuable. He's just a brick wall. Nothing gets past him. He's destroying things. He's also looking after the ball when he does get it as well. So
he's a big unit, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. So he's. I mean, you could say this about any number of players at Dundee this season, given how many recruits came in the summer. But he's what a find! What a find he's been.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him when he was trying to kind of work his way into first team. Presumably, wasn't he? Not fit at the time where he'd come from, but. Saw him in one of the reserve games at North End Park, you know. And two things that struck me. I mean, he's got loads of ability, but he's just what a big boy he is. And that physical presence in the midfield, I think, is important. Alongside, I mean, you know, you've got Cameron McCowan as well, who's been a star this season. He's bound to be
McCowan was quiet on Saturday.
But I mean, he's had very, very few quiet games. And, you know, this is Dundee without the talisman Owen Beck, who will not see back again.
I wouldn't have thought so.
You know, but see, I mean, I like the boy Costello as well. I mean, he, or is it Costello? I can never quite figure it out.
Thank you. I think it's Costello.
I like him as well. So I think he's been value kind of out there on the right also. But I mean, you're saying, and I think by and large, the suggestion is that Dundee, I mean, I want to see the highlights, but you know, weren't at their best. But
no,
to go to St Johnstone, and to grind that out and win 2-1 and keep themselves on track, I think it's testimony to the work they've done this season. They've got a really good squad, and there are goals in them. You know, I like wee Tiffany up front. Jimmy made a good point about Cameron. I think when you're one of the weird guys in football, you've got to have something extra special. And I kind of hoped and thought Tiffany might make a bigger impression. In this side. And I think he's kind of starting to do that. He's a tidy wee ball player. He goes by people. He can take a goal. Generally speaking, I think, I've not seen enough of Dodgson to make a mind up on him, but I think by and large, there's no many weaknesses in that Dundee side. And that testifies to the fact that, you know, they're sitting there in sixth. And I know that game in hand is against Rangers, but they've got a point advantage here. I still think they're going to be a great shout.
Yeah,
finishing the top six. Well, I mean, that would be a phenomenal achievement for them this season.
It certainly would. I mean, as far as Tony Docherty is concerned, clearly when he came in, you know, the story partially was, oh, it's a first-time manager, but really, you know, so much experience from working with Dennett McInnes for so many years. What do you make of the job that he's done at Dundee this season?
He's done a brilliant job, and I think... To be fair to him, I think he was a safe pair of hands to a certain extent. To spend all the time that he did with Derek, and probably he would maybe be the buffer the whole time between the players. And I think that situation over the years has become more important, that the players relate to the manager.
Yeah.
And if you play for the manager, you like the manager, you know, you're going to get more out of them.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing about Derek McInnes over the years is, and especially Aberdeen are finding it the last couple of years, is tactically he was spot on most of the time, tactically. And Aberdeen thought they were better than tactically being good.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for.
Aye. So Tony Dock's been in that journey with Derek McInnes. And I think as a local guy, I mean, I know he's not from here, but he's always stayed here.
Yeah.
As a local guy, I thought he was a real safe pair of hands. Mm-hmm. He'll have all Derek's contacts that he's built up over the years. And he's used them really well because they're a big, strong side.
Why?
And that's in the modern game. That's important. But by the same token, as we've touched on, Cameron's a small boy that he's not been scared to play. Tiffany, lightning quick.
Yeah.
He's been quite prepared to play. So and the wee boy McCowan is a regular. And although he maybe didn't play well on Saturday, for me, he's been their best player this season.
I mean, I mean, he's an interesting case in the sense that there's been a bit of a transformation there as well, because I think he was a wide player really when he came in, and he's been shifted into the middle of the park. He still does certain jobs that you would expect a wide player to do, or a fullback, like at corners or whatever. He's usually the man who's furthest back because he's got that pace, whatever. But since he's moved into midfield, he seems to have really, really come on a lot in there. I mean, that's credit to him for that, because it's a very different role.
That's it. That's a big thing. It can only take one wee adjustment for a manager to make to a player. If you're a winger, your job is to get, you know, beat your defender, get crosses in. People double up, it becomes harder. So maybe the wee change of position has done him the world of good, because he's got a lovely left foot. He's got more shots away this year, which probably for a wide area, he didn't get these opportunities. So again, credit to the manager for making that change with him. But certainly for me, he's been a standout for them.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, how do you broach that subject with a boy, Jim? You know, you're looking at him, you're watching him in training all the time, you're thinking, I think I could engineer something different with this lad. I think he can play in a slightly different position. I mean, some players will be reluctant to even take the notion on board. I mean, you've got to kind of work at that quite hard. Does it simply depend on the type of player? I mean, you're going to just say to him, right, by the way, you know, I know you're going to strike you, but you're playing full back on Saturday. I mean, it'd be a wee bit more complex than that, is it?
Of course it is. But, you know, with Tony Dock seeing him every day in training, and, you know, maybe with the way that they play, maybe they go with the extra guy in the middle of the park. So therefore, if they were playing a five, it would be a wing back, it would be getting up and down there. And he maybe wants to keep him in the team because he sees how important he is. So to put him in, you know, maybe a three and put a play to the left, a three in the middle of the park, it opens up pictures to him when he's playing. When you're playing out in the left wing, there's no picture outside you because it's only the touchline. But he seems to be a guy that's got a wee bit of nous about him. He understands he's a good footballer. You can see it in him. And bringing him in the park has just opened the game up for him a wee bit. And Tony Dock's probably seen that in him. You know, it just happens at times that you see it in players. And I think as a coach or as a manager, I always say that it's your job to identify where these guys play best. And that was always Josh Mulligan that I had at Peterhead. Josh Mulligan at right back for Peterhead was like, they used to call him the Blue Cafu. Honest, nobody could cope with him. And when he went back to Dundee, I said to James McPake, you know, as much as I like Cammy, as a boy and whatever, I couldn't see anything but Josh Mulligan being the best right back in that league, which never really transpired for him. But at the time, at Peterhead, I just thought, God, what a player we've got here. And that's the things that you see sometimes. So he's back at Dundee, they use him in different positions, but as a right back, he had a lot to learn defensively. But if he stood on his feet, nobody would ever run past him because he was that strong. But going forward, he was hard to stop, I'll tell you.
Tim Keyes was at the game on Saturday, excuse me, over from America. We understand he's here for the week. To attend to various issues, what have you. But, I mean, off the back of... Well, and that's certainly one that needs some attention. But having watched that game, Tony Docherty can't have done himself any harm in terms of getting discussions rolling about a new contract.
Well, I sat down with him this week to talk about, you know, recruitment for next year, which I'll have started ages ago anyhow. Uh-huh. But I kind of, one or two folk thought I was being naughty a couple of weeks back in the column. I mean, generally, the thing that Dundee wanted to do is get Doc nailed down as quickly as possible. Uh-huh. Because there must be, I know there's been all the arguments over the weekend about who's getting the Aberdeen job, you know. Would Aberdeen not look at Tony Docherty, the job he's done, he's been there, he knows the club inside out. They might think it's a return to, you know, back to the future kind of thing, but I mean, not for a minute am I suggesting that, you know, I want to see him anywhere else in Dens, because mm-hmm. I think he's on the cusp of reviving Dundee mm-hmm. As a club and the support base as well.
Yeah.
But he's done a tremendous job. He's a man manager. Mm-hmm. He can identify players. He's got that contact book that Jimmy's talked to you about.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he's we keep saying this to people. I mean, he was the assistant, but those two roles these days, the assistant, it's kind of like being assistant editor and editor. The two are almost conjoined. You work with guys here that are kind of, you're really tight with, and you're quite mm-hmm. happy to leave. You know, if you're off on holiday, you're more than happy to leave things to them and all the rest of it. It's the same in football. You know, the trust that these two had. I mean, I was surprised when he left Kilmarnock, to be honest with you, but the job that he's done at Dens, I'd be a liar if I said I thought he'd done as well as he's done at Dens, but he's done tremendously well. And he's a mature guy. I mean, Tony's not a boy. I mean, he's 51, 52, Tony, something like that. You know, so he's an experienced hand. So Tim Keyes needs to sit down and seriously talk about kind of tying him down to a longer term mm-hmm. deal so that the club will go that stability. You were talking about stability earlier on, stability going forward. I think because when the manager commits, then you have other players come in and given, you know, I think now even whether Dundee do finish top six or not, they're going to finish seventh, you know, if nothing else. When you start to recruit, and football's a global village, you know, it's not just Scotland, it's a global village. People speak, people have got contacts everywhere, and they say, they did well last year. I mean, people in England pay attention as well. You know, we're not always kind of like the clown show that some Scots fans tend to think English people think of us. I mean, it's a, you know, people talk, people see what's going on, they will know what's happened at Dens, they'll know that, you know, if you're a loan player, for instance, in manager, this is a good club to send somebody to because they've got a good manager there.
Yep.
So I think Tim Keyes wants to kind of sit down and give him a decent budget for next season and also get him tied in a longer term deal.
Absolutely. Okie doke. I think we'll finish with St Johnson from their perspective of that game. we've talked about the goalkeeper already. I think Craig Levein was quite right after the game. I mean, he came out and wasn't for criticising him, and you can understand that in the sense that actually I think that's probably the only mistake he's made all season. I mean, he's been fantastic. He's a great shot stopper for Saints. He's commanded his box well. I think without him they would be in a far worse position. So while it's unfortunate, I think you can forgive the guy for a mistake like that. And Craig Levein, quite right, not to get stuck in him. Do you think?
I totally agree with that. I mean, your goalkeeper is your starting point, especially when you're in a team like St Johnson, mm-hmm. when you're doing it at that end of the league. He needs to keep his confidence up. Again, goalkeepers are the victims of modern day football where they're asked to come out and be sweepers mm-hmm. most of the time. And there could be mixed messages there, and he's made a bad decision.
Yep.
And for it to be his first bad decision of the season,
aye, done well.
You couldn't complain about that. Mm-hmm. And Craig's quite right to support him and keep him on side, because he might be the difference between mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
staying away for the playoffs,
yes,
and keeping them in the league.
Absolutely.
And actually, that's the ultimate. Ultimately, that's what the season's all about for them.
Aye, 100%. Yeah, and performance-wise in general, it's probably up there, one of their better ones mm-hmm. recently. I mean, they've struggled scoring goals this season, but they created a good number of chances.
Well, so did he score a cracker
against Dundee, and he did. Yes, he got off the mark with an absolute peach of an overhead kick, which tells you something about him. It's actually very similar mm-hmm. to one that he tried at Dens Park in the last game there, but Trevor Carson somehow got a hand to it and saved it. But John McCracken on this occasion couldn't But beyond that one, they did create a number of chances, worked the goalkeeper a couple of times, a few went wide, they've hit the post late on. So performance-wise, should give them hope, really, shouldn't it?
Well, you know, I think, you know, looking at the coach, Big Craig had said, without harping on, we're hard done by two decisions in the game.
We'll come on to the VAR thing.
There's no any point going about that. All you can do these days with referees and VAR and the Premiership is make sure you get your team organised and you take your chances. And Saints have really, other than Nicky Clark, Saints have kind of struggled for a natural goal scorer, haven't they? You know, they're a team. I don't have to tell you; you're there watching them most weeks. But they're a team on the cusp of change and revolution and all the rest of it. I mean, there'll be massive changes there in the summer.
Yes.
What they've got to do is hang on and make sure they don't get sucked into that second bottom spot. And it's now a straight shooter between them and Ross County.
Yeah,
who've actually got a boy, Si Murray, who's scoring. It's 17 this season, Si scored.
Something like that,
you know.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's quite incredible, you know. I gave him a few tips in the barbers the other week when I met him, Sean, as you know. So, I mean, he's, you know, Saints have simply got to somehow or another get this over the line. Now, the thing is, in managerial terms, they've got a guy who's not going to panic. Uh-huh. You know, he's been through the course before, and he knows the script. But this is a time for kind of cool heads and just kind of working away in the training ground and trying to concede goals.
Uh-huh.
And that was a daft one at the weekend. But it's kind of that's a one off. But they've got to start finding goals from somewhere. Certainly not conceding them, scoring them, and that's been an issue this season. Finding goals, they just cannot put the ball in the net often enough.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, they have had some injury problems up that end of the park. Nicky Clark, obviously, the prime example of that, but also Chris Kane, who's obviously now gone on loan to Dunfermline, isn't there anymore. But at this point, we're seeing Nicky Clark back in the team. Craig Levein said, plan is he's on the park for as many minutes as we can get him on there between now and the end of the season, which seems sensible, given the fact that when he has been involved, he tends to score. But you've also got Sidibe, who scored at the weekend, and Benji Kempioka, both of whom are lightning fast. Kempioka was maybe missing a wee bit of match fitness when he came in, but still managed to score a couple of goals. Sidibe's hitting the target more often than not with stuff, so there are green shoots of hope there. Fingers crossed for them. But we should talk about the VAR thing quickly, because Craig Levein raised it. Funnily enough, after the game itself, he was more circumspect. He kind of said, look, I've not had enough time to formulate an opinion yet, really. But when we went and spoke to him yesterday, he did have an opinion, having watched it back a few times. And obviously there was the one late on where I think the decision was that Dundee goalkeeper had the ball under control and it was headed out of his hands on the line. I think you could argue that. I'm not sure he had it under control at all. Mm. So he wasn't happy with that one. But there was another one in the first half as well when McCracken has come out to claim a high ball and stuck his knee into Sidibe's chest. That one didn't even get checked. So it's the lack of consistency that Craig Levein's highlighting when VAR is used and what have you, and Saints have been on the wrong side of that quite a few times this season. They've already had an apology from Crawford Allen for various issues that Saints have highlighted. I mean, where do you stand?
You're speaking to the wrong guy about referees and for a start, and then if you move on to VAR, VAR's been a disaster for football.
Yeah,
I think I was in amongst a lot of people at the start when I thought this could be good. But as a football supporter, I pay my money, I've got a season ticket, I go and watch my team. It's taken away massively for the game.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be a game for supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is taken away for the game far too much.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, they don't even use it properly.
No.
It should be, there's aspects of games where you could watch a game and you see a referee given a corner, for example, which is blatantly not a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, can VAR not be used for things like this, where they say, by the way, you got that wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can lose a goal or
Yeah.
And these are all important aspects of the game. I don't think it's used properly. I don't think the people that are using it are good enough.
Mm-hmm.
The one you're talking about, the one, and I watched it last night, for me, that's a goal.
Mm-hmm.
The goalkeeper does not get that ball under control.
Mm-hmm.
It's in his hand, just touching his hand like that. And when he's called over to the screen to look at that,
I mean,
99 times out of 100, they give the goal. The
fans have got used to referees changing their decisions when they do get called over.
Of course. I mean, and it's hard to keep talking about it because it's every team that's been affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
Every team.
Mm-hmm.
The inconsistency. I watched before I went to Tannadice on Saturday, I watched Newcastle and West Ham game.
Cracking game.
And you watch, there's two penalties given in that game that that are really iffy penalties.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's the time it took.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about 5 minutes for the first penalty to decide, oh, was he offside first? Was he this? Was he that? And then you watch the Celtic game on Sunday where Kyogo nips the ball and there's not even a VAR review. And you just think, are we watching different rules? And then I watched that last night with St Johnson and I just think to myself, I don't get this.
No.
No,
it's puzzling.
And it's just been bad for the game.
Yeah.
And for me, if it's costing clubs money, especially clubs out with the Old Firm, I would be looking to do away with it, to be honest. I just think it's a total waste of time.
Yeah. Jim?
I mean, I'm the same as Jim. I mean, I think there's two things I like to see addressed in football. One of them is out with Scottish control. VAR isn't. We could decide to opt out of that now. We could decide we're not going ahead with it. It's not what. There's a problem there for Scottish referees that want to referee at a higher level.
Yeah, you know, in Europe. That's an issue.
The other one is a handball. It's a totally separate thing, but the handball law is now...
It's all over the place.
Understandable. You know, it's just... I'd go back to kind of either deliberate handball or ball, whatever, you know. But in terms of VAR... One of the reasons we got here was because as football fans, we don't accept or we've not been prepared to accept that referees make honest mistakes, you know. There's a section of football fans that think, you know, particularly in your old neck of the woods, there's something more dodgy going on. There might be, you know, but no, the referees don't make mistakes. So we've wanted to kind of perfect it. And actually, we've made it worse. Because all we're doing is we're re-refereeing the game.
Uh-huh.
We've taken the spontaneity out of the game, that combustion when you score a goal or, you know, you get a penalty, and then all of a sudden it's three. And the thing is, it's not taking 30 seconds anymore.
No.
It's taking 4 and 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
You know, the game is now dragging on, you know, so between that and stoppage time, you know, games are now lasting for 110, 115 minutes and all the rest of it. But effectively all you're doing, because the thing is, whether you've got VAR or not, The key component of football in terms of refereeing a game is that phrase, in the referee's opinion.
Yes.
So all you've done, when it's supposedly a clear and obvious error, you've binned it up the stairs to the box in Glasgow where, you know, you've got the VAR officials sitting there and you're asking, in your opinion?
Uh-huh.
And then you're throwing it back at the ref and say, well, in our opinion, here's what we think, but it's still your decision.
Uh-huh.
Because that's my understanding. The VAR people aren't saying, here's what you must do. They're saying, well, we've just watched it again and we think X.
Uh-huh.
Still up to the referee. So, you know, that's where I've got some sympathy in the consistency argument in football, because no two incidents in a football pitch are ever exactly the same.
No.
But they're usually pretty close, you know, high ball, reckless and all the rest of it. And VAR for me is just, I mean, I would dump it tomorrow.
Yeah.
If we took a decision next season that we were doing away with it, I would accept honest mistakes from a referee, because frankly, it's better than this, because we're still getting mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We appear to be actually getting more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just dragging the game out interminably. We've lost so much enjoyment from the game because of it. So I would dump it.
I also
think it's made referees poorer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lazier.
Mm-hmm.
Even watching the Man City game on Sunday. Arsenal were obviously wanting to be physical.
Yeah.
The referee had made up his mind, I'm no yellow carding anybody.
Mm-hmm.
De Bruyne, boys like that, were victims. Mm-hmm. Haaland, he kind of a strong tackles for 30 minutes. Now, if the referee would have protected the better players and gave yellow cards or whatever, but he was just waiting for something to happen that, oh, well, that can be a decision that's made
Up
the stairs elsewhere or whatever. And you know, I said it with Nick Walsh. I think Nick Walsh is a good referee.
Mm-hmm.
It was really poor on Saturday. But for probably the first time in a while, he's refereed without VAR.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Kevin Clancy at Arbroath a few weeks ago, who's meant to be another top referee. Really, really poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that they must be in between at times, you know, when they're refereeing. Mm-hmm. That's okay, I'll let that go, because if I'm wrong,
I'll get caught.
They'll call it up, you know. So when they step down into the championship or whatever, then they're getting caught out. I listened to a Southampton supporter talking. I can't mind who it was. It's the guy that he's a pundit for ITV. He done Cheltenham last week. They're talking about the championship, and he says the best thing about supporting Southampton is not having VAR.
Yeah. Aye. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Well, I mean, just finally on Saints then, I mean, beyond the VAR thing, Craig Levein, I mean, he made a point in the stuff when he's having a pop at VAR. He said, look, I'm not saying this is the reason we are where we are. You know, it's for football reasons that they are there. Can they get out of it?
well, yes. Mm-hmm. They can get out of the win games and score goals, you know, but so
that's
can
the
those,
if
so
that's the big if.
That's the problem, you know.
You'd have to think it will go to the wire, this one, won't it? I mean, it's not going to get.
I think it's going to the wire.
I think they've got the right manager.
Yeah.
Everything that's going on at St John's and the club being up for sale, etc., it was a brilliant appointment. I don't think other managers would have been able to handle the situation the way he has done and the way he will at the end of the season. And that gives me hope that they'll survive okay with him.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way, he'll handle pressure a lot better than Don Cowie will at Ross County. And that's not slight on Don, but he's a much younger guy, kind of making his way in the game. And, you know, once you get down to that last couple of games, or if it comes to the last game the season, that asks for the sort of things that, you know, to be honest with you, you need to have been through the heat of fire and the heat of battle, I think, to handle that sort of stuff. You know, you need to have that experience to be able to kind of pass on and learn from it. And that's why I think hopefully, because, you know, we all want to see three teams the full-time sides surviving as opposed to Ross County. You know, they're a club I actually quite like, but I think Levein's got the experience to see them through this.
Magic. Okie doke, thank you very much for joining us, Jim and Jim. It's been a pleasure. And Eric Nicholson will be back next week. In speedos or not, I'm not sure, but let's hope not. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget too to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe. to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. Local matters.